Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you recognize that music, you know what we're going to talk about next. In 1997, a video game called GoldenEye 007 debuted on the new Nintendo 64. It was based on the latest James Bond movie, GoldenEye, which was released in 1995. And you may ask yourself, David Byrne style, wouldn't it make more sense to have the video game based on the movie come out at the same time as the movie? And you would be right to ask yourself this very pertinent question. But as it turned out, it didn't matter. The game was a huge hit, and it ended up breathing new life into the James Bond franchise and the video game genre. Elise Knorr is an associate professor of English at Regis University. She's also the author of GoldenEye 007, part of the Boss Fight book series on iconic video games. Elise's book tells the incredible story of how a team of rookie developers helped a British game studio develop one of the most revolutionary video games ever.
The studio that took it on sort of didn't want to take it on at first. So Rare, a little British game developer studio in the middle of nowhere, Twycross, England, sort of wanted to turn down Nintendo's offer to give them the game and to develop it. They were afraid that it wouldn't go very well because games made in response to movies or games that followed the plot of movies tended to be notoriously bad. And so they just didn't want to bother with it. So then when a young developer named Martin Hollis convinced them to take it on, they sort of gave the project to him. It was his first project lead that he worked on. And his team was a bunch of guys who had never worked on a game before ever. So they were underdogs and nobody really expected much out of them. They were just sort of giving them a project to cut their teeth on, and it ended up being one of the greatest first-person shooters of all time.
Yeah, for sure. What was so innovative about GoldenEye at the time it was created?
Well, for one thing, first-person shooters were really a PC-only genre at that point. Games like Wolfenstein or Doom were really popular first-person shooters, but they were all for PCs. And PC gamers tended to be a little bit more hardcore. You know, to have a PC in your house was a bigger deal, a little bit more unusual. Whereas console gamers were a little bit more, you know, just there for fun. Just the fact that it was a console first-person shooter was a big deal. And then the things about it that design-wise made it kind of stand out. One is that the game was sort of designed backwards in the sense that the team developed spaces and levels before they had developed objectives for the player to complete in those levels. So what you had was a bunch of random hallways and rooms in certain levels that you didn't really need to go down to get anything or do anything in the mission. But they were there just because it made the space feel more realistic. It made it feel like an actual bunker or an actual missile silo. So things felt very realistic. They thought, wouldn't it be fun to be able to feel like James Bond and really take out Russian guards from all the way across the dam or all the way across the other space of the level? So they added in a sniper rifle. They added in motion capture, where when you shoot an enemy in a certain part of their body, they wince in pain and sort of grab that part of their body. And that involved one of the members of the team, one of the artists on the team, actually putting on a motion capture suit and going into the studio and having his colleague punch him in different parts of his body while he was blindfolded. So they really gave their all to make this game. The multiplayer was a very new thing, right? So being able to compete against three of your friends using the Nintendo 64's four controller port capabilities, that was very new and is a big reason the game ended up being so popular. Also, just the amount of humor, I think, was really innovative. At that time, games like Castle Wolfenstein and Doom, those first-person shooters, were really dark and gory and grim and serious, and you're kind of trolling around in dungeons, battling monsters. In GoldenEye, there was a real sense of humor. There was some really funny, silly things, sort of irreverent things. You can turn on big head feature in multiplayer and all your players have big heads, or you can shoot paintball. You know, everything explodes when you shoot it. Even tables and chairs burst into flames when you shoot them. So they definitely kept a sense of humor, which was pretty unique for the time too.
Definitely. One of the things that I was intrigued about, one of the features in the game was the watch, like that James Bond, you know, when you're playing the game, you're James Bond, and there's this feature where you would occasionally look down at your watch. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so in the attempts to make the player really feel immersed in that first-person perspective. They thought, wouldn't it be fun if the pause screen, when you hit pause, is you looking down into your watch? And James Bond has this famous watch full of gadgets, especially in GoldenEye, the movie. And so at other times in the game, it's not just a pause screen, it's also a tool. It has a magnet feature that you use to escape from a prison cell at some point by sort of magnetically attracting the key to the cell. It has a laser attached to it that helps you escape a welded shut train door. So it really makes you feel like James Bond, that you get to play with all of these gadgets. There's different data devices to sort of steal covert digital information. There's a camera. So they really wanted you to feel not just like you're doing a first-person shooter where you have to run and gun, but also that you have to collect information and sneak around stealthily and use all the tools at your disposal, including your very cool James Bond watch.
Mm, yeah. GoldenEye was created specifically for Nintendo's new N64 console. What impact did this console, the N64, have on how the game was created?
Well, when the team started developing the game, there was no N64 yet. So for a lot of development, they had no idea what they were working toward in terms of the N64's hardware capabilities. They didn't know what the controller would look like. They didn't know how fast the graphics would run or how much storage space they would have for graphics. They were sort of just getting updates from Nintendo on what aspirationally they were going to come up with, and then they adapted as they went. The N64 came out famously late. That sort of threw a wrench in everything for many different game developers. But at the end of the day, what really changed how GoldenEye works is the N64's single analog control stick. The control stick where you can move your character around completely in three-dimensional space was really revolutionary at the time when games like Super Mario 64 or Mario Kart 64 came out. The GoldenEye development team was playing those games and saying, wow, this is amazing. We should make a fully three-dimensional game. They had originally intended for the game to be on the rails, where you're kind of directed through the game automatically. You don't get to move around freely. All you get to move around is kind of arcade style is the gun. But once they saw what the N64 was capable of and how fun it was to move a character through 3D space, they were inspired to take the game off the rails and allow players to move the character all around the level and explore and get lost and sneak up on people and all of those fun things we love about the game.
Mm-hmm. The game is known as a breakthrough for its lifelike recreations of scenes from the GoldenEye movie. How did they accomplish that?
They accomplished that because very early on in their process, they had complete access to the film studio where GoldenEye the movie was being shot. So they went as a team into the film studio. They walked around the sets. They even picked up little souvenirs like baked glass and some fake ammunition cartridges. They gawked at Pierce Brosnan walking through the canteen. So they all got a kick out of that. And while they were on that trip to the studio, they took photos on a very early, very enormous digital camera, took those back to their studio campus at Rare and scanned them in. So a lot of the textures in the game, like on the walls or the floor of the different level spaces, are literally photos from the film set. Boris's shirt, some of us might remember how ugly his horrible shirt is. That was just a photograph in the costume wardrobe department of the actual actor's shirt that they scanned in. They also were provided with early scripts. They were provided with lots of photos and images of the weapons. So they put all that directly into the game, making it incredibly realistic for its time.
What was the public's reaction to the game?
It was a slow burn. There wasn't a huge, huge burst of sales early on, as there are with some games. But Ken Lobb, who the gun Clob is named after in the game, he made a really clever decision to make a deal with Blockbuster that they would all stock the game, and if they had any problems with it, they could send it back free of charge. And it ended up being rented. It had one of the highest rental rates of a game at the time. So people were renting it, falling in love with it, seeing how fun it was, multiplayer especially, and then going out and buying it. So it sold slowly and steadily. And then it kind of caught on as a cult phenomenon. Everyone was playing it at each other's houses. It was a real social game. People loved just having, you know, in high school, college sleepovers. It really became a cult classic for playing on your couch with your buddies, with the pizza, and just kind of having a hilarious good time. And so it took off slowly as word of mouth caught on. It came out right around the time that the N64 did. So there was a lot of excitement around that and the N64's multiplayer capabilities, which didn't hurt.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found so intriguing about the multiplayer mode is that they had the Rare Studio guys team had a license to use any Bond. They could, so you could have all the Bonds. You could have Sean Connery, George Lazenby, Roger Moore,
everyone,
Timothy Dalton. And also they had characters from that weren't in GoldenEye, like the iconic character Oddjob from Goldfinger, and also Jaws.
Yeah.
How much of a part did that play in the fun of playing in the multiplayer mode?
Well, yes, they ended up with this extraordinary license that no Bond game would ever again have a license this all-encompassing. And again, Brett Jones, this huge James Bond fan on the team, went to town with it. He was like, I know that this game is about GoldenEye the movie, but what if we had a mission with Moonraker? You know, and what if we had a mission where you got to meet Jaws? Some of these iconic Bond villains from other movies. And so, you know, he went to town and added all these characters into the multiplayer, and it made it really fun. Someone like me growing up, I was 10 when the game came out, and I hadn't seen a single James Bond movie ever, but it was still so fun because everybody looks different. There's these dastardly villains with weird teeth and this short man, Oddjob, who's, you know, nobody really understands if you haven't seen the movies why he's so short. So it was just a lot of fun to have all that variety. And then just before the game was about to ship out, MGM Studios kind of stepped in and said no to the multiple Bonds. And that was just because all of those movie stars, you know, Timothy Dalton, Sean Connery especially, I believe, wanted to be paid royalties for that. And it just would have bankrupted the whole project. So they did have to remove those Bonds, but the Bonds remain in the original code for the game. And so there is someone out there who has made their own mod of GoldenEye called Goldfinger, where you do play as the Sean Connery Bond.
Oh, cool. That must be a lot of fun.
It's very fun. You can download it and play it on any PC.
How does the success of the GoldenEye game compare to the success of the movie?
GoldenEye game was much more successful. I mean, in different ways. So in terms of just pure sales, GoldenEye the game was more successful. But what GoldenEye the film did that was very important was it revitalized the Bond franchise. At the time that GoldenEye came out, there had been a very long gap between Bond films, between the last Bond film, which had starred Timothy Dalton, and GoldenEye, the longest gap in the Bond film franchise history. Timothy Dalton had been a really unpopular Bond and had kind of killed interest in the franchise. And also, the franchise was originally very much about the Cold War and, right, it was like very 1960s phenomenon. And so GoldenEye the film had the mission of revitalizing the franchise and showing why it was still fun and relevant for the 1990s. And so it was a tall order. And it was, you know, it was the first Bond with Pierce Brosnan. It was the first Bond with Judi Dench in the role of M. And so it was a really, really important film. And I think that the fact that we still have Bond movies today shows that GoldenEye, the film, was successful in doing what it needed to do.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. One of the things that shocked me was in terms of how much better the game sold, like how much more profitable it was than the film. Was just the game sold more than 8 million copies and earned $250 million worldwide, which was nearly double what the film made. That's really hard to believe.
Yeah, and if you talk to a lot of gamers from this era, they'll tell you that they played the game before they ever saw the movie. In my case, really wild story, I hadn't ever seen the movie until I started working on this book. I had played the game my whole childhood, but I had never even bothered to see the movie. I mean, in many ways, the story of the movie is told in the game. I also think that the original Austin Powers is really spoofing the entire Bond franchise, but in particular, it's spoofing GoldenEye the movie. And this anxiety around, is this womanizing 1960s kind of figure going to still be relevant in what the media kept calling the politically correct 90s?
Mr. Powers, my job is to acclimatize you to the 90s. You know, a lot's changed since 1967.
No doubt, love, but as long as people are still having promiscuous sex with many anonymous partners without protection, while at the same time experimenting with mind-expanding drugs in a consequence-free environment, I'll be sound as a pound.
And so Austin Powers certainly plays that up with that character.
Yeah, definitely. What is the legacy of the GoldenEye game?
I think that the legacy of the GoldenEye game is that it brought first-person shooter gaming to an entire generation of gamers who were playing games only on consoles at the time. And for that reason, I see GoldenEye as the direct ancestor of Call of Duty, Halo, Fortnite, all of these first-person shooters today. I think they owe GoldenEye their popularity and their success in some way. GoldenEye is the first game to bring that genre to the console.
And all these years later, GoldenEye still holds up?
It does. I mean, it's very difficult to play the game if you have been playing first-person shooters of the last 15 years or so, because you're used to having two control sticks. You're used to have one control for your movement and one control for your aim. And GoldenEye forces you, if you're playing it on the original N64, to kind of retrain your fingers to do things very, very differently, which can be hard. But now that it is being re-released, we just found out, I think that a new generation of players is going to get to encounter this game and play it with a certain, dexterity that their own hands are used to and grew up on devices that are that maybe make the game controls more fluid. But I do expect that it's going to have a huge resurgence of popularity once it's re-released.
That was Elise Knorr. She is the author of GoldenEye 007. Find out more at WPR.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, George Saunders, Kevin Nealon, and Elise Knorr. Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at WPR.org/beta or on Twitter at WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
I'm not a part of this cast, Overrated. I don't even know these people.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I have no connection whatsoever with this show anymore. Lawsuits, in fact.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I'm off doing bigger and better things now, Hollywood Squares. I guess you could say...